Off the Ball.
GAA. James McCarthy, Michael Simon, Stephen Cluxton back in.
Those lads are back training and have been for a few weeks now, so I'd expect them to see them in the mix very soon.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along to The Hurling Pod on this Bank Holiday Monday. We got 1 week out of being called the three fucking nobodies. Because now, unfortunately, James Skell, one of us is no longer a nobody.
Yeah, Will, you're famous. You're on the left board now, Vancouver.
Exactly, yeah, there you are.
I think I'm slightly less famous than the man who adorned the start of the news on Sunday on TG Carr and on RTE. And I got a few tweets from people. I had no idea what had happened. So the way this started, and for the YouTube viewers, you can have a look here at Paul Murphy in all of his pomp and ceremony reading out the declaration in front of the GPO. Because the only idea that we had, Skell, before this actually happened, and I was getting messages from people going, you're not going to believe it, Paul Murphy's reading out this, was that he said to us at some point yesterday lunchtime, actually, lads, can we push this back to Monday morning? I've got a little bit of work outside the GPO. And I assumed this was going to be naturally with the army, but he was probably going to be standing around outside the GPO for the parade and whatever else. And there he was, Skell, front and centre.
I'll have to say, Murphy, that you have a fabulous poker face. So I wouldn't like to play against you. And I have to read the text in its entirety, right? Because like I thought you were going up for the day, touring, as I said.
Yeah.
Well, men, how flexible would you be to do with the pod in the morning, maybe? I'm up at the GPO all day at the Easter commemoration and I'd be cutting a fine to be home, to be honest. That sounds like, yeah. So, and then he says the best part, right? No panic if it doesn't suit, as if we're going to say, yes, Paul, we want you to record the pod, forget about going up to the GPO and doing a national duty. But I have to say, I feel like a proud parent. There's our lad. That's our lad at a pint of television. That's my man. And we had very, very contrasting weekends, Paul. So while you were being, while you had a national job, let's say, of significance, but sure, I was at food production.
Kevin, exactly. Kevin, like, I mean, yeah. you told us what you were at. Like, I mean, if you don't do that job, sure, there'll be no meat on the shelves. There'll be no meat, there'll be nothing. Do you know?
Now, I do have a heap of questions I have to ask you.
Right, go on. The
floor is all yours. Go on.
I'll be quick, I promise, right?
This is where it unravels for me this weekend now.
No, you've got five medals and a uniform.
Yeah.
What are they for?
So one would be Chad. Then I have one for Lebanon, but you'll see on it then it has two. So two trips to Lebanon. So if you do a trip, you get a medal for that trip. But then if you do the same trip again, you get numerals on it, as opposed to, you know, you'd look like one of the lads from one of the other armies who's just a big chest full of medals. We'd have lads who have 10 trips to Lebanon, like, you know, so if they had 10 medals, it'd be just mad. But then you have the UN peace medal then. So if you do a peacekeeping mission, you get that. So for the first mission I was on, I would have got that, but you won't get subsequent ones after that. Then there was a medal then for people who were served during the centenary of 1916. So that's one. I think that could be the middle one now. I don't
that's
have them in front
of me. Irish flag.
No, it's not. It's, no. Oh, geez, I tell you, I can't think now. I haven't got them in front of me. But, and then the other one is I'm in the army 15 years. Well, I'm in 16 this year. But, so you have a service medal. If you reach certain milestones, you get a service medal in. Yeah, so that's the blue one with the yellow stripe on it. Cool. So that's what the five of them are. Yeah.
Question two.
Go on.
Explain the process of how you're chosen for this role. Not in the army in general, but for yesterday.
I don't know, to be honest. So just ceremonial section in the Defence Force. So we would have a ceremonial section who look after, you know, if you look at, for example, the state funeral of John Bruton, for example, like that's the military representation at that is ceremonial section look after it. Or then if you see Arbor Hill, there's people who look after those ceremonies, and that's what they are supposed to do all the rehearsals, they do everything. So one of them contacted me and just said, look, how would you feel about doing this? So I was like, yeah, absolutely. Said I would. So that was really it. I don't know what there was any meetings before that. How was your name mentioned? But just mentioned, asked, and that was it.
And question two point B before Skell comes in with his third question. This must have had some influence. They knew you were doing a podcast and you were on the BBC last year. I'm assuming they're going, this guy is comfortable performing, he's comfortable talking in front of a crowd. I'm guessing that's how you were selected.
Maybe so. Like, I mean, there may be certainly part of it. Like, the Defence Forces are obviously aware that I'm doing podcasts and that I'm doing television. Part of it is, it's not for everybody. Like, in terms of, not everybody actually, not to say they want to do the proclamation, but public speaking in general is a kind of a, you know, as in it's for some people, it's not for other people. So I suppose maybe that was something in their mind where they thought that, yeah, well, look, maybe he's comfortable. He'd be happy to do it in the first place. And if he needs a bit of work, we can polish him up and bring him. Because obviously being on BBC or being on Off the Ball, it's different to, you know, doing a proclamation. Like, the tone is different and stuff. So maybe they just thought, right, sure, there's a starting point. We'll ask him and we'll see how he gets on. And sure, worst comes to worst, we'll throw him off Good Friday and we'll get someone else.
Promise. Yeah. Last question for you, Murph, right?
Go on.
You obviously got a notification period prior to doing this, right?
Yeah.
How hard was it to learn it off by heart? Because obviously the way you were talking and speaking and the way you're engaging with people in front of you, you learned it off by heart.
I did.
You were reading points, but you didn't obviously read it like reading an essay in school.
Yeah, well, that's it. Look, part of it was that I thought to myself that some people are very fluent readers. Like, you know, when they read it, they sound like that they're just speaking normally. But I thought to myself, maybe I'm not as good like that. Like, you know, as in I probably speak better from memory. So I just said, well, look, I have time now. It took about 2 weeks, I suppose, just like initially kind of getting a paragraph and trying to get that paragraph done, then get the second paragraph and so on. And then after a while, it was just getting to the stage where you need to be cued by the first line. And the whole point of it, though, to be honest, was like, look, when we do kind of ceremonial in the army, like as soon as you're in the army, people be saying practice until you can't get it wrong, basically. So just keep practicing. And I just stayed at it. And the one thing was, I was thinking, like, there's a lot going on outside the GPO on the day. Like, there's a lot of people, it could throw you off. Like, I mean, obviously the Taoiseach there, the president's there, but you have a lot of cameras and stuff. So I was like, you know, you could get distracted. And if you got distracted, but you were trying to read it, you might find it hard to go back and find where it was. So I was like, I was looking at the trees. I didn't look at anyone. So it may look like that I'm actually looking at everyone, but I was looking at the trees because I said, look, I don't want to look down and look at President Higgins now or something and be distracted. So that was it. I just learned it. I said, look, it's, you know what, for the sake of 2 weeks now, when you're driving to work, when you're brushing your teeth, whatever, just be practicing away.
If there's any consolation, man, from television, it looked like you'd a real William Wallace vibe about you. You were speaking to the people, as opposed to looking at the trees. So
I can't say that I may have watched The Wind That Shakes the Barley and maybe Michael Collins once or twice over the last 2 weeks to jazz it up. But I know. Look, in fairness, like, to be honest, there's a lot of people have done it really well over the years. So I kind of watched their videos on YouTube and stuff. I looked, there'd be lads and ladies that will follow on after this and they'll improve on it again. Like, so I know it's great. It's great to do it. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And like, I assume you don't want a crutch of looking down at the sheet either, because obviously you've got the scroll in front of you. People can see it is written out. You're in full Pádraig Pearse form where it's actually there. But the last thing you probably want, Murph, is if you forget one line, the next thing you're trying to look down at the page, because a second will feel like an hour if you're doing that.
Yeah, that's it. I just didn't want that kind of a moment to happen, which is, look, again, the reality is it's absolutely fine that if that was to happen where you lost your, I suppose you lost your rhythm for a few seconds, you know, that's fine. People would forgive that. But I said, you know, it'd be great if you could just get through it, nice bit of flow to it, and, you know, aim for as good as you possibly can. And if something happens in the meantime, like a gust of wind comes and blows out of your hand, there's nothing you can do about that. Like, you know, so just, you know, it's like Skelly always say, control the controllables. Whatever you can control, you know, control that. And if something happens there, if a seagull flew into me, sure, look, I can't control that. Like, you know, O'Connell Street, big possibility.
You were the image of a seagull hitting you in the face.
I was full sure. I was like, I'll be the lad now who'll go out here and I'll have it all memorized and a seagull will fly into me or something. I'll be like, that's my luck.
Pesky
now,
seagulls.
You know? Pesky seagulls now or something. So I just, you know, I think when you're doing these things, you go, what's the worst thing that could happen? There are these intrusive thoughts. You're like, what? What's the worst thing could happen to me here now? And yeah, but thankfully, no, the seagulls gave me a break anyway. So,
You like, obviously, you've hurled in All Ireland finals, you've been on national TV and all that type of stuff before. Was this more nerve wracking than that because you knew you were going to be front and centre?
Very similar nerves, to be honest. I'll be honest, very similar feeling afterwards that you came off. It felt like you won the match, like, or you won a match when you came off it because everything went well. And everybody, I suppose, that you work with was happy with it. So it actually, you could point to a lot of things like you were playing the match, but it was nerve-wracking because we were obviously inside in the GPO. So there's a few of us that were held in the GPO for the ceremony. So when the ceremony starts, you have the representative body out the front, and then myself, the chaplain, the head chaplain to the forces, and the piper who does the piper's lament. We were all inside in the GPO, and then the cadets would have been in with us. So I would have been the last person to go out. But once you saw, you know, the cadets went out, I was like, okay, it's getting close to us going out here now. And bearing in mind, when we were in the GPO, when we walked in, the crowd wasn't there yet. So we walked into the GPO about maybe 10:30, 11:00. So the crowd wasn't out there. The hundreds of people weren't there. And never mind the hundreds of people, you know, the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, all these people were out there now. So the only thing was, when you were inside, you could hear the crowd building, and then you could obviously hear the band playing. So when the chaplain went out, you're like, oh, it's getting close to me now. And then when the piper went out, and eventually I was just standing in the GPO on my own going, right, you know, just get it right here now. Like, and when you walk out, just don't be distracted by the fact that there's just going to be hundreds of people around, you know. So there was that nerves. It's like coming out the tunnel in Croke Park, you know. You go into the dressing room, there's not that many people in the stadium, maybe there's a few. And then when you go out, the place is full. So it's just, you know, trying to perform in front of that then, like, it was really it, you know.
I love it.
I promise we're going to get into Clare and Kilkenny in a moment. But the last question on this, is this a one and done? Like, as you said, people have done it well previously and so on. Can you be asked back to do it again if they go, do you know what, the 2024 one was pretty decent, let's get them back in 2026? Or do you get one go in your career and you never get to actually do this again?
Yeah, I think it's one go and that's it. I actually don't know when it started. I think it's a relatively new, and I say within the last 20 years or so. But yeah, there's been a lot of people. Obviously, each year it's changed, and this was just my one to do, and that's it. Yeah, so someone else will get the opportunity next time. And I think it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things. It's a great kind of privilege in your career that you got to do that. If it's something you wanted to do, yeah. So the next person that comes along now will probably get told over the next maybe few months or maybe closer to Christmas. Listen, will you do that? And like, that'll be their turn to have, you know, bring their family to Dublin and enjoy it. So yeah, that'll be it now for me. That's my one. I'm very happy with it. So probably go out on top as well, just in case. If they do ask me again, I'll just leave it at that.
And one last question. How long were you hiding this from us?
I didn't hide it from you at all, lads, but I was like...
Well, you did. You told us on the bloody day, but if you had told us a few weeks ago, we'd have been all over it.
That's why I didn't tell you. No, to be honest, like, look, I'll be honest. I knew I was doing it myself. I knew, like, you know, my family were going up and we're going to have a bit of a day. Like, it's gotten a nice reaction. And obviously from a GA perspective, people are interested because, you know, we're doing this and, you know, the people who listen to this pod and, you know, my clubmates and stuff. So maybe I underplayed maybe people's interest in it. But at the same time, I was just going up to do it. And I didn't really think that. I apologize, lads. Sorry.
Maybe
sorry.
I underplayed.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no, the reaction has been very good that I noticed, Gail. There's a few people who seem to be still living in the 1920s who are calling him a free stater. I did notice that along the way. But a few army people who messaged me went, you know what, he's done really well and he's actually really well respected within the army. So that's probably the best compliment, Gail, I can possibly give him, is that any of the army people, and they're all GA people who are in the army as well, that actually messaged me, said he did a great job and he's very well respected in the army. So I expect, Gail, he's going to have more of those medals than just the 5 fairly soon.
Jeez, you will. And I will say, like, obviously, a lot of the reaction you would have seen, Murph, would be via, I assume, social media. Because anyone who contacts you direct via phone here are not going to give you any kind of bad bad comments. But in social media, you'll always have a heap of dickheads. it's as simple as that. A heap of dickheads. But I thought you were deadly, I have to say. And I don't give out praise too easily.
And
I just couldn't get over how you memorised it under such pressure.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I know, look, that was great. I was
impressive.
Yeah,
yeah. And like, it has to be, like, I know you can't say it now, but I'll say it. It has to be a positive for your career going forward, for your path, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't know. I haven't thought about it that way. But look, certainly, I suppose I met a lot of people yesterday of all ranks in the army that, like, it's a big organisation in many ways in terms of the amount of people we have. But, you know, there was people there who were part of the ceremony who, in their own right, I suppose, had their own important job and were feeling a bit of pressure doing it. And so when you know, he or she did their job, you know, from a parade commander to someone on the parade, You know, there was a lot of kind of nervous faces around it. People didn't want their own little part, you know, to go wrong. So, you know, when you're chatting to people afterwards, you know, you kind of have that connection with people now where, you know, you were all involved and nobody yesterday, nobody slipped up, nobody, you know, missed a beat. So, you know, you're meeting people afterwards and you're all kind of just saying well done to each other. So like from that point of view, you know, you'll definitely meet those people down the road in work or overseas and, you know, you'll recognize each other and say, oh, geez, yeah, we did the GPO that day. So definitely from that point of view, you got a great sense coming away from the day that, yeah, I'm going to meet people here down the line that we did that day and we'll have a laugh about it in future. Or, you know, at least, you know, you kind of have a bit of trust for the person, you know, that you did something that day, you know.
So what you're telling me is you're going to be the general in the next 20 years.
Oh, God, no.
You're telling me.
No.
But like a general farmer, I can go with that.
What's your actual rank at the moment currently? Remind us again.
Captain.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think I asked you this question like when we were probably 15 points deep after the live pod last year. How many steps away are you from being the general?
You said
way too many steps and I won't make it too close now.
Do you ever see those, what do you call them, temples in like Tibet where there's like 4,000 steps? Like or it's like that part in Ace Ventura where there's just thousands of steps and he's coming down. That's the amount of steps now. Where I'm away from.
Well, after yesterday, you're after finding a different lift. You're after finding a lift, man. So.
Good. Right, we'll park the army chat for now, but it was nice to see Murph on TV kind of out of nowhere yesterday when neither of us were expecting it, genuinely. Skell, I'll give you a first shout on the TV time for this match of the weekend for the Division 1 League final, first of all, because we'll dig into the game itself, but few people messaged, you know, typically you get the early questions before the weekend and people were a little bit annoyed about the fact that yesterday on Easter Sunday, there was the nice high profile slots for the Division 2 and 1 football finals, Crow Park on the Sunday afternoon. And yet the hurling is on this Saturday, 7:15 at Semple Stadium, which maybe feels a little bit off Broadway. Now, there are two arguments against that. Man City and Arsenal were on TV at the same time as Dublin against Derry. I think with the affair that was being shown up at the Etihad with three shots throughout the game, quite a few people switched over for extra time and penalties anyway because of the nature of the game. But how do you feel about the hurling? Because there is Championship football on this Sunday, being on the Saturday night slot, as opposed to having a Sunday afternoon one.
Like for me, this weekend is it's always been in the GA calendar. I say going back months, so it's not as if that the GA were landing into a situation whereby we were like, oh shit, we have to fix a National League final, you know. So I think, let's say, with the Championship in football, not trying to diminish that, but it should be reversed because we only, as we said before, we only get two national finals in our sport, and I think this should be prime time. The same slot should be given to the hurling as it was given to the football yesterday, and like look at the products that was produced yesterday, especially in the Division 1 game. So I'm kind of disappointed, and I don't want to be one of these people like that will be always, you know, banging the drum that hurling should be front and centre of absolutely every single slot, because I understand it doesn't happen that way. You have to pick your battles, but for certain games, like, there should be number one slot. So I'd have no problem if you told me that the first round of a championship game in hurling was going up against a National League football final, given, you know, priority to the football final, considering it's a national final. So I thought that the same respect would be issued at the hurling. I think from my own perspective as a fan, you know, obviously I don't have any county involved in the game, but like, I'd be involved with the 20s on Saturday. You know, we're playing obviously Offaly in our first round, and there's a strong chance that I won't get to see the game or, you know, have to catch up, which is disappointing from a neutral fan perspective that it's kind of clashed, because, you know, the championship game to us and to the Offaly in the 20s and to all other teams that are playing that weekend is the most important game in their lives at the moment, right? But ultimately, we'd love to have watched, or even some would have gone to see Kilkenny and Clare, but that opportunity now is now gone. So I think kind of there was a bit of a misstep, a mess up, if you put it that way, whereby we should be given a national slot, a primetime slot, if you want to call it that. But ultimately, it's not the case. So we just have to, I'm afraid, we'll put up and shut up.
What do you reckon, Murphy? We've had this game in the evening a bit in recent years as well. I remember going out to cover Waterford and Cork, and it was definitely under lights where it was dark at Semple Stadium. I think that might have been a 7 o'clock throw-in, maybe. Maybe it was 7:15 as well, because they have to have that provision for extra time, I think, in the Division 2 final that year as well. So I don't know how you feel about it. Would you prefer this to be an afternoon game on a Sunday as opposed to a Saturday night?
Yeah, like traditionally, maybe it's just inbuilt into us that we kind of associate the, you know, hurling or football primetime slots as, you know, the Sunday afternoon ones. But certainly sometimes, I mean, even if you look further down, and it's understandable with, you know, I know we'll probably touch on the quarterfinals there in a while for the All-Ireland quarterfinals, but we've often, I suppose, seen that, sometimes when these games are moved, it just seems very flippant that it was an afterthought that, okay, well, I will move it to this time and that'll be fine. And it does, for a supporter, I don't think the players are distracted a whole lot by it, but for a supporter, you're kind of thinking, well, hang on for a second. How did the thought process come to putting it at this time? And I agree with Skehill, you know, if you look at yesterday, the timing of the football yesterday for people to sit down. And I spoke to a lot of people who may not normally watch the football, who flicked across it, got into it, saw that it was a good game and said, you know what, I'm actually going to stay watching this. And as a result, you know, you've now automatically probably brought in a few people, particularly with yesterday, brought in a few people that may not have been watching it over the last few years, whatever, might watch the next few matches, whatever. But also your hardcore supporters, you know, it's at an ample time for them to actually either get to the game where, you know, you're particularly talking with kids and stuff. If you're bringing kids to the game and stuff, if you're travelling, if that game goes to extra time at 7:15, you know, in Thurles and you have kids, like we saw the football go for 90 minutes and then go to penalties. Like, so all those things, I think you have to bring into consideration that if you're a family who travels to the game, well, now your plans have to change because the final is now at a time where it's, is this reasonable? Probably not, to be bringing very young kids to it. So there's lots of things there. And I just think, look, again, for like Skehill was saying, this is a final. We understand other ones have to be moved, first rounds and different things. But a final should have its own little primetime slot. It should be there for everybody to access, be it on television or to actually mainly go and attend. You know, because we're talking the importance of league finals. A real reflection of how important the league final is really the attendance. You'll see a lot of people if they're there or not. But this will actually take from a lot of people, I think, maybe getting to the game.
Yeah. The quarterfinals, which you've already mentioned there, is probably going to piss a few people off. So Saturday, June 22nd, is the same day as the URC final. So what has happened here is they've moved the game to the Saturday. But as a result, because that's on later in the day, we're going to have the early quarterfinals again. And I remember watching definitely a doubleheader a few years ago, which was on at lunchtime as well, and it really annoyed people at the time. But you're looking at 1:15 and 3:15 for those two quarterfinals. They're both going to be in RTE. And the main reason that they've gone to the Saturday is because the Tailteann Cup games were already locked in to be shown on the Sunday. And they're the games that RTE show on the Tailteann Cup each year, which are the two semi-finals. So as a result, we're then looking at June the 22nd. I'm just scrolling through the full list here. All-Ireland Hurling Quarterfinal, first one at 1:15, and the second one is on at 3:15. So Sunday, June 23rd at Croke Park, the Tailteann Cup semi-finals are on at 2 and 4. Now, the thing is, Murph, there's a lot of people arguing here that really, why can't we have the Tailteann Cup games on the Saturday and then let the Hurling have the slots at 2 and 4 on the Sunday? Because there's a few weeks coming up here where there are tasty fixtures on the same day that have got the prime slots. Like, I'm looking at the day where you've got the Kilkenny against Galway game is on the same day as Limerick and Tipperary. So we're getting both games on the TV in the perfect slots there on the 28th of April. First game's at 2, second game's at 4. That's the ideal. Instead, this has been handed over to the Tailteann Cup and the football on the Sunday. Well, we're going to have two prime All-Ireland quarterfinals being played early in the afternoon on a Saturday. What's your thinking?
Yeah, it's certainly a tricky one. It'd be interesting to hear, let's say even from the football point of view, what's their view on it? Because they're looking at the Tailteann Cup going, well, in fairness to the Tailteann Cup, it's probably worked out really well. I'd say that would be a fair estimate of the Tailteann Cup. I mean, I'm thinking back of, wasn't it Westmead? They won the first Tailteann Cup. Would I be wrong? Would that be the
Westmead won the first one. Mead won the second one. And again, I think it's been a positive competition overall so far. But like the Joe McDonagh Cup would absolutely kill for the covers that Tailteann gets. Because GA Go have been shown a round. So every round has had one game. And then you've got national TV coverage on RTE for the two semi-finals. And the final, I think, has been on TV as well. So therefore, they're getting a fair amount of coverage while second division hurling gets next to nothing. I think the McDonagh Cup final is the only one on RTE.
Yeah, true. And in fairness, if you cut it across, would a football quarterfinal be on at those times? What's happening with the football quarterfinals?
So yeah, I think they're on GA, Go. And I assume they're on the Saturday, I'm guessing. So I haven't seen the full schedule for GA Go. I think they're announcing it next week. We'll get the locked in times for that. But you're obviously crisscrossing with competitions like that URC final, which is on and so on as well. But the Joe McDonagh Cup final, is on Saturday, June the 8th on RTE. But that's the only game currently down for coverage. And unless GAA Go announce something totally different on, I think it's a couple of days' time. I think they have their launch either tomorrow or Wednesday where they're going to announce everything. Okay. Unless they're putting Joe McDonagh onto the GAA Go, which I haven't heard that they're doing, that might be the only Joe McDonagh Cup game again that we see all year. And last year we had a cracker of a final, the Carlow and Offaly game, and there's going to be loads of really good games, but the Joe McDonagh gets no attention at all.
Yeah, yeah, which is a real pity, because that's, I suppose, to say there's a bit of a drop off there. Like we're pointing towards the Joe McDonagh as that's, I suppose, the great hope where we're going to pull a team from that will progress on and really come back into the competition over the next few years. Like, I mean, we're looking at the Joe McDonagh going, you know, Offaly win that. We're pointing, we said Offaly should have, you know, a good few, I suppose, big days over the next 5-10 years that they'll come back into it. This is the first step for the likes of Offaly. We saw, you know, obviously Carlow last year and what they did. You know, it was a great match. Joe McDonagh was a great match last year, but it's going to be the stepping stone for some team to come back towards, if that is the intention, come back towards the rest of the pack. Because after that, there's quite a significant drop off in the hurling, where maybe with the football, those boundaries are a little bit closer. So it's part of it is, I suppose, if we do want to bring teams back into the Lee McCarthy, given the respect to the Joe McDonagh as a standalone, not to say a standalone day, but as a standalone slot where they actually have their time and that it's not a movable feast to an extent where they feel like they're just being pushed around to a different time. The Joe McDonagh, I think it is essential to give it its proper weighting on a certain day and that, you know, at least they know they're not an afterthought.
Mm. But Murphy, in terms of like the level of, I suppose, importance of each respective competition, you know, the Joe McDonagh being on one hand and the Tettle Cup, it's streets apart. So the Joe McDonagh has way more, let's say, importance for the winning team and the losing team because of what happens the year after. Whereas the teams in the Tettle Cup, presumably, they'll start into their provincial championship the year after, just like they will every year.
Mm. The only benefit scale is that they have a place in the All-Ireland Series. That is the benefit of the title if you win it.
I get that, but again, I know what you'll say is, in my opinion, right, is that the place they will take in the All-Ireland Series will be, you know, it's 6-1 after the other will. They're not going to win it. You know, they might get an extra game or two. Whereas the Joe McDonagh, they get themselves, and I know you'll say they won't win it either, but they'll be partaking in the whole series the year after. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I just think it's a lot more... It's a lot more beneficial to the winning team with the Joe McDonagh. And I suppose when we're looking at GAA, we only have one competitor. It's the football, you could say. And I just want parity. I just want equal opportunity for everyone. And we just don't get that. Like there's a master. As you were talking there, Murph, I was searching for the master calendar that we get at the start of the year. And it shows that the McDonagh Cup is secondary to the quarterfinals are secondary to the Tettle Cup. So like this was planned all along. And it's not new news just because it's been fixed. It was always fixed for this Saturday. So I just don't think that I personally don't think the hurling gets the, I'll use the word respect it deserves. We don't get the prime time slots. And like we have 5 knockout games in our championship. 5. That's what we have. Mm. And 2 of them now are basically scuppered onto a Saturday afternoon. In competition with another sport, I presume, Will, is it?
So the URC final is obviously on in the evening, so it's to move for that slot so that TG Carr and RTE can both show it. But this summer is going to be particularly difficult, I would say, for Gaelic games in general, because you've got, and I know obviously we've moved back a little bit earlier, but you've got the European Championships on, and the Euros are obviously going to draw a huge amount of eyes onto that, and they always do. And then you mix in towards the end of that, when the club season starts, you've got the Olympics on as well. So it is very much in competition with other things. And even the golf majors are on early this year as well.
My hope, Will, is that Sergio Crossi is because people will be sitting down for the URC. You would hope that they'd sit down a bit earlier, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your viewing figures there, just for the crack. That like in Ireland alone, Leinster played Munster last year in the semi in the URC, and there was 856,000 views, you know, on average. Whereas our hurling final on average is 800,000. So that's a big competitor. So you'd be kind of hoping now. I know I'm clutching at a straw here that they'd tune in a bit earlier, at least you know, catch a couple of GAA games for the rugby, which is unlikely, however, but. We can wish, can't we?
Well, that's where you find out whether there's much of a crossover appeal between those who want to watch Leinster rugby and those who want to watch Clare and Dublin All-Ireland quarter-final or
you're saying Clare and Dublin?
Well, I'm just thinking that was one
fired,
of the...
Will. Shots fired.
No. What I'm saying is...
Murphy, bow out quick, get out of here.
wasn't that one of the quarterfinals last year before anyone accuses me of actually making a prediction there? That was the Tony Kelly goal where he banged in all the goals, wasn't it? That was a quarterfinal.
Yeah, that was.
There you go.
himself Fitzgerald Rampage.
Direct comparison before somebody claims that such and such aren't going to come out, or before any Wexford fans turn around and go, actually, we're going to finish third and we're going to get ahead of Dublin and we're going to win a preliminary quarter final and qualify. So don't come at me over this, despite Scale's best attempts.
It wouldn't be like your encyclopedic knowledge there just to get you out of trouble, Will, that you're able to recite exactly 320 kilograms in the Gaelic grounds.
Exactly. But that's where we're at. They're going to be on early, unfortunately. Again, we'll find out the full details from GAA Go this week when they announce, but that's where the quarterfinals are. The All-Ireland Senior Hurling semi-finals are going to be across the weekend of July the 21st and 22nd. And on the master fixture list, I don't see the second semi-final down as RTE. Oh, no, it is. Sorry. It's on the weekend before. That's okay. And it's mixed with the Camogie quarterfinal this time around as well. So we'll just have to look forward to this. So sorry, July the 6th and 7th are the semi-finals. They're going to be with Camogie quarterfinals. And then the final, of course, is going to be on the 21st, which is at 3:30. So it gets a bit normal after the quarterfinals, but the quarterfinals is definitely where everyone is going to get annoyed. And it's the Leinster Senior Hurling Final, which is the late game this year, which is on with the Joe McDonagh Cup Final. So that's going to be a doubleheader in RTE, 3:30, 6 o'clock.
We'll be there, Murph.
We'll be there.
playing each other, Scale, will you, if we're making
exactly.
Here, yeah?
I'm going to call it right now. I don't have to reflect anything, Will.
No.
And, I'm nailing my colours right to the mast the second.
Good stuff. And the Munster Senior Hurling Final, 4 o'clock on the Sunday on June the 9th. So that was the RTE fixture list for the championship, which came out on Friday. And straight away, people were going, what the hell are these quarterfinals they won on 1:30 and 3:30? What's this all about? So that explains why they're there. Now, this weekend, I'm kind of hopeful, Scale, about this. And I'll tell you why. Because I went to watch two of the league finals myself at the weekend, which is 3 and 4. Then I watched a good bit of 2 and 1 on the telly yesterday. Mm-hmm. And particularly Division 1, where Derry and Dublin decided to have a slug at each other. And all thinking beforehand was, do you know what? Both these teams might hold back a little bit. They don't want to be given away too much. They might play each other later in the year. And then we got a really, really good league final. Yeah. Can I hope for the same in the hurling on Saturday evening?
I think you won't be too far away from, Will, because I just think it's the beauty of competition. Like, it's our job in the media, if you want to say it, that we can build up all these scenarios and, you know, try get in the minds of Brian Lohan and Gerry Tling and say they're going to do this move and that move. But ultimately, we keep saying it's a national final and there's lads in that panel. And I know from my experience and yours, Murph, if we're sitting in the dressing room, we're not caring about 3 weeks' time. You know, obviously, it's important when it comes time. But right now, it's the battle that's in front of you. And whether you're in a Clare dressing or Kilkenny, I guarantee you, because it's a national final, they're going to want to win it equally. Now, what the management teams do in terms of team selection, it obviously plays a part. I think that both of them will probably take this opportunity to see if there's someone who's on the periphery of the 15, someone who, let's say, has featured a good bit in the league, has done pretty well. This is the last kind of, I won't say last chance, but the last opportunity to see, can they cut the mustard at a championship level pace, you know, against high level opposition. So for Clare, for example, I'd say Brian Lohan will look at, you know, he'll look at Smith in the corner, he'll look at Lohan in midfield. Can these lads really cut it? Because when the guys come back, the Tony Kellys, the SODs and all these lads, are they going to keep them out? You know, and that's a great question to be able to ask your guys, like when you've got a panel of strength on both sides, that's okay, let's throw you out in the national final. Let's see how you get on. And if you do well, you keep the jersey. It's that simple, regardless of who comes back. So I think that they both want to win the game, certainly, but they'll use this as a prime opportunity to see, what do I have? Because what's coming down the tracks in a month or two, let's say, I'm going to need X, Y personnel who have proven well in the league to show me in the championship. And I think this is the closest you're going to get now in terms of a championship game. So I think we're going to be treated to a really good game. Albeit the time is what it is, but Thurles just has this, I suppose, unique way of producing good hurling games, you know, especially in evening games. We've seen it throughout the years, and go back even further, what's been done in evening games, night games, you know, in Thurles for Saturday evening, whereby everyone calls it the home of hurling. It's my favourite place to play. I'd say Murph is up in your tops as well. It's just something about the place. So I think we're going to get a really good game and a good battle, and I'd say the championship will be put at the back of people's minds for at least a fortnight.
Yeah, because I think, Murph, when it comes to this, this almost works out perfectly in a way where Clare and Kilkenny know they can't meet until the knockout stage of the All-Ireland Championship, which we just mentioned, that's June. It feels a long, long way away before they could potentially play again. Yeah. Yeah, unlike the football, where some of the teams that played at the weekend know they're actually playing next weekend. And in Westmeath's case, they play 5 weeks in a row, where you might have to conserve a little bit or maybe have to think about the load on the team at the moment. both of these teams have got a little bit of time to get ready for the provincial championships after this weekend. They know it's a rare enough meeting between them. In Clare's case, they've lost a couple of All-Ireland semi-finals against Kilkenny, so they'll want to try and turn them over. Mm. In Kilkenny's case, I'm sure Kilkenny would love to get a first national title under Derek Ling before going into the summer. So it's well set up for both these teams to have a right good go at each other.
It is, yeah. And, you know, one of the big points that, for me, kind of changed my perspective on this final was seeing how Clare approached Tipperary. Like, they were just... first 10, 15 minutes, they were so impressive, and it wasn't waiting around to see what Tipperary were going to bring. And I'll be honest, like, I was one of the first people saying that, oh, I think they'll hold back a little bit. Let's say, if you asked me a few weeks ago, if Clare were to get to a league semi-final or a final, I was saying, yeah, they're going to hold back a bit with Limerick on the horizon. But then when I saw that, I said, actually, Jesus, what's this? Brian Lowen appears to be taking an angle on this of, well, look, let's just not lose momentum. And as we've said, they've built a really good panel that there are lads going to lose out. Skehill said it there. You know, Tony Kelly, Shane O'Donnell, these boys are going to come back. Ryan Someone Taylor, will have to lose. Yeah, Ryan Taylor. So, you know, lads are going to have to lose out. So I can completely understand those players going, yeah, well, every opportunity I get, I'm in the shop window. I need to show Brian Lowen that I am a lad that he should be picking. Because they do have lads who like are automatically have a jersey. And then after that, it's up for grabs. And then when you look at Kilkenny, you know, Kilkenny are building on the back of, okay, a Limerick win, great. I'm sure they've parked it. But they're going, well, let's keep this building. Because in fairness, I suppose, the sentiment around Kilkenny to an extent would have been, you know, maybe with, you know, as we see, like, you know, Richie Hogan step away or Park Welsh stepping away. And people kind of go, well, do they have people coming through to actually win? You know, so Derek Ling has an opportunity, I suppose, to compound that. Lads, look, you know, players will always be stepping away and will always be bringing in players. That's just natural evolution of a team. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're in the league final now. We've bet Limerick. You know, we've had some moments where we really need to improve, but we've also had some really good moments through the league. And at the end of the day, if we weren't playing the league final, we were probably going to have a really hard training session anyway on the same day. So a match, to be honest, and you'll often hear people say it, like, nothing substitutes a match. You know, you can have all the hard training sessions you want. A match is the best preparation. And of course, there might be players with niggles and so on. Listen, you know, player X has a niggle, pull him out. But that's the opportunity then for maybe a few lads who came off the bench against Limerick. It's an opportunity for lads who maybe played earlier in the league but haven't got an opportunity since. And all those things put together, you'd have to say that, yeah, it's not a guarantee, but, you know, that there seems to be the right kind of mix of things there together that we should get a really good game. Now, I suppose it could be nearly lofty to think that we might get a Dublin Derry. That was just, you know, it was phenomenal. But if we got a really competitive match with a bit of bite to it, and I think, you know, the fact that we know a championship is coming out, we'd really get the appetite flowing thinking that, right, this is brilliant. And like you said, we'll bring back to your first point. Mm. The fact that these teams know they're not going to meet each other for quite a while yet, or maybe not at all, but definitely not for quite a while yet, that allows it that there's no need for shadow boxing. So yeah, maybe I'm hopeful, maybe I'm an optimist, but I think we do have the making of a really good game here.
Yeah, so that semi-final that we watched last week, Skell, where Clare come flying out and kind of blitz Tipperary in that first 15 minutes particularly, I can't imagine Kilkenny are going to give them that type of start this time.
No, I think what Kilkenny produced against Limerick was a very, I think I used the word structured performance last week, which was exactly what the case. They seemed to have Limerick, you know, well analysed, and they didn't, I suppose, Kilkenny didn't set up their game specifically to cater to Limerick's strengths, you know what I mean? They went about their business their own way. So sometimes when you're doing, you know, analysis on teams, you can say, right, we need to nullify this, and you can really take the focus off yourself somewhat. But I got the sense that Kilkenny just did enough on Limerick and said, right, we're going to play it this way. And if it wins, it wins, you know, so be it. And they went out hard, and in fairness, they got off to a bad start, which is tricky for teams to do against Limerick, clawed their way back into it, and then produced an excellent performance after going a man down, albeit. So I'm certain you won't see a replica of what happened in the Clare Tipperary game for the first 8 or 10 minutes, because Kilkenny won't allow that. I just think that they have too many seasoned personnel in their panel, in their team as well, to allow, you know, a team of Clare's ability to get a run, yeah. So like we would have stated last week about probably my own personal disappointment in the Tipperary defenders and defence, and allowing that to happen for, you know, repetitively until there was an 8-point gap. And ultimately, that was the gap for the rest of the game. So I can't see, you know, Owen Murphy, Hugh Lawler, Paddy Deegan. I just can't see Adrian Mullen, that situation developing against Clare. I see it be far more organised, more structured, and it'll be kind of a real physical first 5 or 10 minutes. That's the way I see it. And like, I think Clare certainly won't shy from that. They were extremely impressive against Tipperary, but I have to put a bit of the focus on Tipperary and say that Tipperary were so poor, and they'll admit it themselves, in those first 10 minutes that allowed Clare to kind of nearly express themselves in a free manner, which I don't think gave a true reflection of where the game was actually at. So I can't see that happening. I'd be truly amazed. I use that word amazed as that actually develops, because I've never seen that happen to a Kilkenny team, you know, in any, let's say, first 10 minutes of a game. So I think it'll all contribute to a really good battle, a tight affair. I don't think the issues with last year's semi-finals and the previous, you know, the championship will have any bearing on the game whatsoever. Different venue, different time of year, different personnel, etc. So I just think you'll see two 15s and 20s, sorry, going really hard at it. And it's going to be a tight game. I actually find it very hard to call it. As you were talking, Murph, I just hopped onto the my advisors there, the bookmakers, to see what the odds were. And it's even both sides. Like, so. Yeah, it's evens both sides. So even they can't call it. Even the algorithms can't call it. But it's not going to be a repeat, if you ask me, Will, of both semi-finals. It's going to be a much more closer affair, hopefully, as a fan.
Give me your report card on Kilkenny then, Murph, and what we've seen so far.
We've certainly seen instances. If you look at the Wexford game, like, so starting right back, you know, Kilkenny, there's been a few teams coming through. One of the teams earlier on was trying to figure out how their full forward line functions, because they weren't making the ball stick quite a bit. Like the Wexford game particularly, it was inside Nolan Park, and they were using the ball well, but they couldn't get the ball to stick in that full forward line, whereby you either had a player coming through from the half forward line to take it off and pop a score, but they invariably were getting broken down by the Wexford backs. If you look at the Clare game down in Ennis, similar again, the full forward line weren't really involved in that game. So Kilkenny, they just weren't getting a lot of traction. Then when you go forward to the Limerick game, they somehow managed to isolate the Limerick full back line, which was a big turning point for Kilkenny, because, you know, if you have Owen Cody in there, you have TJ or whoever, if you can isolate them, brilliant. I mean, it's obviously far more beneficial for any forward that they're one-on-one with a back. But it seemed to be that Kilkenny figured out, okay, we need to adapt depending on what team we're playing against. And playing against Clare, what Clare have managed to do in the game down in Ennis was, I suppose, stifle that Kilkenny attack. Kilkenny were fairly smothered trying to move the ball forward. Bit of it was down to Kilkenny. They weren't really that fluid. But Clare were very aggressive. And I think Kilkenny will look at that going, okay, well, what can we learn from that game? And one of the things they'll be saying is that, okay, well, Clare will run at us if we give them an opportunity. They have big, powerful men. And, you know, I think we'll see a matchup the likes of David Blanchfield going with David Fitzgerald, two big men. And I think the message there will be, you know, stick with him and get him not running at a goal. Now, not to say go fouling cynically, but if you need
to...
Go on, yeah.
That's a good point you're going to raise. I'm going to ask you that. You said Blanchfield might take up Fitzgerald. Will he follow him everywhere?
I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
You see the way Fitzgerald goes off back in his own defence sometimes. Would Blanchfield go with him?
I think so. Like, I think David Fitzgerald is getting to the stage in his career now where, you know, if you're going out playing Clare in an All-Ireland semi-final, you're going Shane O'Donnell, Tony Kelly, David Fitzgerald. You're saying, what's our job? And they're three different jobs. You know,
same clientele. You're right.
Marker for Shane O'Donnell, a lad who's going to keep his head when Shane O'Donnell is doing his magic in around the goal. You need an absolute machine to go after Tony Kelly to be kind of following around the pitch. And then David Fitzgerald, you know, as in, except he's going to get the ball and he's going to run at you. And it's like fighting a heavyweight, I'd say, for 70 minutes, because you're going to be battered, you're going to be bruised. You have to be adaptable. But, you know, if he gets the ball in his hand and he's running towards goal, you know, you need a man with serious pace to stick with them. So I think that's where David Fitzgerald is getting to. And I think, you know, it'd be a good learning curve for Kilkenny as well to go, well, I think they do have that player. They do have, you know, ample amount of those big physical players to deploy against him. But, for the, like, you know, if you're looking at other players down through the championship now that Kilkenny could, like, if they play Galway, you know, Galway have big men. If they play against, you know, Tipperary, whoever, you're going to have to be faced with that threat as well. It's an opportunity for Kilkenny to figure out, well, who's our defenders that can do that? But I think overall, in terms of Kilkenny, what we've learned from them is that they haven't been perfect at all through the league. And I think, you know, Derek has been very honest about that. He said, you know, certain times against Offaly went in and there was words in the dressing room. And often managers say, no, we let the players do whatever. He's been very honest saying, yeah, it's not good enough. And he's really got into that. But I think they've reaped the rewards of it as well. You know, that bit of honesty has actually brought them on. And I think where the strength will lie in that honesty is going, okay, when we played Clare, we probably gave them far too much respect. We waited around. And the one thing we know with Clare is that they don't wait around. I think both teams, though, regardless of this league final, and it'll be, I suppose, mooted going into it, I don't think either team will really take a huge amount for it, that if they meet again in the semi-final, that it means anything. So if Kilkenny win or Clare win, I don't think either team takes that down the road to an All-Ireland semi-final or whatever it may be, or an All-Ireland final, and says, oh yeah, Jesus, remember we played them in the league final. You know, so this is a very much, you know, this is a moment in time. This is a league final. Both teams can learn a lot from it. But I think Kilkenny will be looking at this going, okay, lost by 3 points down in Ennis. We had opportunities to win the game where maybe if we took our points instead of going for goal towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, Skettle, you mentioned that at the time. We also then, we didn't get traction from the full forward line that day. Can we do what we did against Limerick and isolate a full forward line? That'll be something as well. And then can we stop Clare running at us the way they've been running at teams? I think those are the three things Clare or Kilkenny will look at.
On the flip side to that, Skettle, for Clare, you mentioned, and I suppose we've talked about this so many times, it's been about trying to build a panel. I suppose now at this stage for Brian Lowen, it's about finding the right 15. And I saw the Our Game podcast, we're arguing on Thursday, well, Owen Breslin was on and he was talking about it and saying that maybe Conlon at 6 might actually be a weak link for Clare. Now, he was the All-Star at 6 last year. Do you think there's any issue about Conlon at 6?
I suppose there's a bit to unpack there now. Firstly, All-Stars, like some of them, sometimes I feel like All-Stars can be popularity choices as well. No, I'm not going to, you know, belittle that phrase any bit at all. And like, did he deserve the 6 last year? In my personal opinion, he didn't. Okay.
So just to take that off, the thing that I found very unusual last year was a lot of the 6s who would have probably been in contention to win the All-Star. It was a weird year, particularly when Limerick were the All-Ireland champions and Hannon hadn't played in the business end and Will O'Donoghue had gone there and he was in contention for midfield. So leave that to one side. I suppose the point I was trying to make was last year he was picked by the All-Star committee for his performances and you've got some people arguing that maybe he might be a weak link in the Clare team. So go on.
I honestly can't debate the validity of him getting the 6. Like I understand the process and just with the way the cards fell. I personally thought I should have got it, but people can blame the bias there, etc. But no, I'm sticking to my guns on that one. Now, to say he's a weak link, I understand the concept of it. I understand where he's coming from. That where Clare have McInerney to come back in, have more personnel to come back in, and the way they play at such a pace game, you know, energy power game, that maybe John Conlon, the game is kind of, I won't say gone past him a bit, but at least he's not to that level anymore because he's more of a, I would call it a string puller, if you like. Like, we'll sit in the pocket, dropping off a man, not going toe-to-toe marking, you know, being kind of the quarterback, if you like, in that 6 channel and building plays. So sometimes I think what you'll see now with teams, if he is at 6, is that people are going to go at him. They'll run at him. I don't know, if I was over a team, like, and he's hitting for 36 years of age, run at him. I'd run at him all day and see can we stretch his legs a bit, you know. But I don't know, will he be replaced? That's a fair... I understand, that, I said to you, the thought process behind it, but I don't see it actually happening myself. There's no evidence to say that he needs to be replaced. You know, like when he was missing, was the year before last, Murph, wasn't it? It was the 22 semi-final, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Missing, like that was a major hole in the Clare defence, let's say, for obvious purposes. So I don't see that actually coming to fruition. And first and foremost, we used to see it in Galway all the time where we have certain personnel at 3 and 6 and then there'd be people calling for the replacement. But who do you put in? Right, Grant, we'll take these people out, but who are you going to put in now? So like if you take out John Conlon, who's going in 6? And the answer is not, it doesn't jump out at you from the page straight away. You know, it's, you're like, I'm not too sure. You know, because I presume McInerney will come back in and he'll presumably go to 7 where he plays really well. You'll have Jim and Ryan at 5. I can't see Jim and Ryan going into 6. You know, and I'd say John Conlon will stick at 6. So I don't see this. I don't see this like there's a ready-made replacement for him, or you know, who say the writing's on the wall. Sometimes you can get a feel in counties that this person is coming, like and it'll be the rightful handover. But I don't feel that in Clare just as of yet because the right person hasn't evolved yet, and they seem to be top-heavy as well in the sense that a lot of the new guys they have coming are from like positions number 8 onwards. But I don't see a lad in a central channel who can come into number 6, and I also don't see a person changing. Like I don't see an Adam Hogan changing, a Cleary changing, a Rory Hayes coming out. I just don't see that, you know, because it upsets the whole rhythm and structure of their back 6. So I understand what Owen was saying, but I just can't see it happen. I honestly give it a 20% chance, you know, but stranger things have happened, I have to say. Stranger things have happened. So I just can't see it. Maybe I'm reading the situation.
What do you reckon, Murph? I mean, we've been talking about John Conlon for the last few years as one of these kind of incredible conversions from, you know, being such an attacking player to becoming a 6 and the way that generally it's worked quite well for Clare. But are we getting to a point where it's now a concern, maybe on a defensive side? Because I don't think anyone would have any real complaints about the way he passes the ball, the way he'd be in possession at all.
Rich? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, I saw that this kind of came up as a topic, and like, I haven't really had concerns about John Conlon at all. Hmm. Like, you rewind less than a year ago, and when they bet Limerick, was he man the match? I think he was man the match after that. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, the game he went to his brother's wedding afterwards. Yeah.
That was an extremely physical game, and he wasn't found wanting at all. Like, if you look at, and I agree with Skettle there, you'd actually inhibit, I think, one or two players if you put them in centre back, because like Jeremy Ryan has a free roaming role up the wing there, and Clare reap a lot of benefits off it. David McInerney as well, like, he's on the wing. That allows him, being on the wing, to actually fleet up the sidelines there. And the one constant then is Conlon holding the centre. His tackling's very good. He uses his physicality very well as well, in that he's a big, strong player, but he doesn't go in recklessly generally into tackles where the referee constantly has it in his head that, oh, I need to keep an eye on this fella, that he's a reckless challenger and so on. And, you know, he's a very, I suppose, slick tackler. Like, he gets involved, he flicks the ball, he's happy to spoil it, and if another player gets away. But if you often see John Conlon's game, he has a great ability to, ball breaks down, he gets into the ruck, gets it up, takes a little step out, pops it off, and now brings Clare back on the attack. And like, that's not to be underestimated, that role. If you even look back at the Tipperary game, he was on an enormous amount of the ball. In the first half, my abiding memory of that game was, if Tipperary got up as far as the half back line of Clare, ball lands in, lands down on top of, let's say, Dermot Ryan or whoever, John Conlon was invariably sitting back about 10 yards, ball breaks out, he gets it, off to the side, Clare launch an attack and on the go. I mean, it's a very, very simple job, but he does it really well. And other players who may be inclined to fleet up the field won't be there, sitting there to do that. So I think he's the one constant there, that he will sit there. He won't often drift up the pitch. He can if he wants, but he doesn't often. He stays there. And I wouldn't have concerns yet. I haven't seen any red flags to say, oh God, this is a concern. Because at the end of the
day, is it fair to say, Murph? Is it fair to say, I have to ask you, that he's really benefiting from being like in a systematic defence, if you like?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like every player in that defence is not standalone, you know, doing their own bit. Well, they are doing their own bit, but you know what I'm saying? They're very systematic in structure. Like, I think he's benefiting that big time, that the role that the midfielders have also to suit him.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you contrast the way, like, unfairness. Out you go. I'm doing the podcast, Levin. Hang on. Close the door.
Well, this is getting clipped.
This is fairness. You mean looking at me going, oh shit.
I was wondering what was going on.
No, that's not the wife, that's the kids, okay? No, I was saying, against, if you watch the Clonlara Ballygunner game, Blown Thurles, I don't think he, no disrespect, he had the support cast to take on Ballygunner. And he kind of got overran. You know, he couldn't play the way he plays for Clare. You know, so maybe that's kind of maybe a bit of a memory in Umbra's land's mind. But I think he's a great, he's good for the system in that sense, right?
Yeah.
That he's allowed to play the way he's played. You know, sitting off, not going toe to toe. I don't think he'd survive wing back. I don't think he'd survive cornerback or fullback. You know, having to go toe to toe. But I think he's suited to that sixth role that Clare have adopted for him. Would you agree?
No, I completely agree. And I would also, you know, to expand on that, would say that it's similar. I know we often, probably people are probably sick of it, talking about Declan Hannon and so on. Like, the stuff we don't see is him speaking to all the players around and coordinating exactly what's happening in front. Like, that is such a fundamental role of the six at this stage. Like you said, Skell, they're not all playing individual positions, playing for themselves, and whatever happens, happens. They're trying to keep a set structure. And John Conlon within that then is the coordinator. He is telling everybody, calling them all, and he's using his hurling brain there. He's using his IQ. He's using experience to go, okay, wait now, there's a gap like forming over here. I have Kyle Hayes coming up the side here or whatever. Who do I move across? He's actually controlling, pulling the strings there. That's stuff we don't see. So I just think that, look, granted, the man is 35 probably this year. I know people may point to those things and say, look, oh, these are different things. But I haven't seen anything yet from John Conlon to say that there's reason that they should take him out from centre back.
Okay.
Lads, look, I have to look at my heart broke here, right? This is Esme. Say hello, Esme. Come here. This is Sophie. Say hello, Sophie.
Hello.
Now, out you go, please.
This is where we get ready to give Skell a little bit of a break. So, Murphy,
like do you remember your man on Sky News where the kids rocked in?
Yeah.
That's Grace going, oh shit.
Yeah.
Well, you can have first bite at a prediction, Summer. What we'll do is we'll answer the listeners' questions that come in and the comments from the YouTube on the members' pod, which will be available on Tuesday morning. But I can't let you away without doing a prediction. So this is the hurling pod with Bord Gáis Energy. It is, of course, they are proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. But this is the moment everyone cares about. They don't care about what we talked about for the last 10 minutes and all the nuance. They just want you to call what's going to happen on Saturday night.
I will say, now, you already know where I'm going with this, but I said to Kenny Clare in Ennis, I tipped Clare because I thought where the two teams were at the time, I thought Clare would just pip it. So I thought it was very, very honest there. I think Kenny had brought it on a small bit since then. And I'd like to think that, like I said earlier, that they've learned a few lessons from how they played Clare last time. They're a bit naive. They stood off them a few different things. And coming off the back of the Limerick match, you know, where they really brought it to Limerick, I think they're saying, look, we want to win a bit of silverware here. We want to keep the good mood going. So this is a very finely balanced match, but I think Kilkenny, it's going to be a very small margin, point or two. I think we could see it coming down to similar the way it finished in Ennis, where it's kind of one team just has the upper hand, a bit of a siege towards the end and the team falling over the line. So I'm going to go Kilkenny this time by just maybe 2 points.
Okay. Scala, who are you going for?
I agree more from the sense that I think the teams are different from when they faced off a couple of weeks back. Normally, you look at the semi-final performances of both teams and try to take some evidence as to what they're bringing to the final. Both were extremely impressive. You know, so you're splitting fine here. So you're not to be siding with the bookies here, but I think you could have a draw in your hands as well. Like I think Clare, you know, they get out fast, they get out of the traps fast. Murphy's already alluded to that, but Kilkenny have this, you know, real fighting, that they're not going to ever go away, so they're always in the game, you know. And I think they have the clientele at this point in time to take on Clare perfectly. And I'd say, you know, I think we could see extra time this, honest to God. You know, I don't see any team blitzing. I don't think you're ever going to have a case where you're going to say Clare or Kilkenny are going to win by 5 or 6. Not going to happen in my book. I think it's going to go down to a very, very low score at the end of the game. So I'm going to say it'll be a point either way, but I'm going to name McCullers and say it's going to be a draw in extra time, which I think Kilkenny will take.
Interesting. I think Clare are going to win in normal time, but only by a couple of points. I think it's
fair. Very, very, you know, so there's no problem there. Before anyone comes at us here with these bombs on the cards, like, everyone just relax, you know. Get it, you know.
Before we go, the Division 2A final was on yesterday, so I was working around this. So Laois were playing Carlow in Netwatch Cullen Park. Laois won effectively by double scores in the end, and I do wonder about the motivation slightly in this one, where both teams were already promoted ahead of that game, so in a lot of ways the work was already done. But big second half from Laois. So Carlow hurled with the wind in the first half and went in a point behind. And I think that was probably the losing of the game for them. Laois were up by 9 points to 8 at half time. And then early in the second half, Carlow got a goal from Marty Kavanagh. And you're thinking, maybe they've just kind of turned this round a little bit. And Laois were definitely closer to what I would call their championship team than what Carlow had out before anyone hits the panic button about Carlow ahead of the Leinster Championship. But then Laois managed to fight back. Mossy Keyes, who's been in good goal scoring form, hit the net. And then they got a second goal not that long after that from Jer Quinlan, who was a very good underage player a couple of years ago. And that put Laois into a very strong position. Ender Rowland was bombing down the puck outs in the second half because he had that extra bit of wind behind him. He made two very good saves, particularly a good save from Paddy Boland where Carlow could have got a second goal. Then Rowland, he seemed to be involved in everything, took a penalty which was saved, and the follow-up from the Laois captain Aaron Dunphy went just wide as well. But Laois just kind of dominated that last 15-minute period or so. I think they ran off 1-4 to a point after the Quinlan goal. A very good platform for victory, 1-2-22 to 1-12. So Laois, who looked in a bit of trouble when they lost to Carlow in the regular section in Division 2A, now look like they're very well primed for the start of the Joe McDonagh. So they've got Offaly, last year's beaten finalists, in the first round of that in 3 weeks' time. So both teams have got a little bit of time to get ready. I think the Joe McDonagh is actually really hard to call, particularly given that Westmeath and Offaly hurled quite well in the Division 1 this year and had some good performances. And now you've got Laois coming in flying after big wins against Down and Carlow at the end of 2A. So interesting to see how all this pans out. But Laois go up as champions, but Carlow also go up into the new Division 1B. And Carlow now getting ready for their return to the Leinster Championship in a few weeks' time as well. So that's what happened in the 2A final at the weekend. Lads, it's been a pleasure for the main pod this week. We'll be back with the members pod on Tuesday. And Murph, all we can do is salute you for how well you did yesterday.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.